The duty of the STRATCOM commander comes with a responsibility unlike any other in the world. Retired General George Lee Butler, who commanded U.S. nuclear forces from 1991 to 1994, summed up his responsibility like this: "AO, should our warning systems detect an attack on the United States, my role was to advise the president that we were under attack, to characterize it in terms of the type and number of weapons and their targets, to advise him of his options as portrayed in the nuclear war plan, to elicit an execution order, and promptly transmit it to the operational forces to ensure their timely launch, survival and delivery of their weapons." A 60 seconds into this unfolding nuclear crisis, the STRATCOM commander in this scenario exits his office and hurries into a private elevator that is his alone. The ride down into the command center at EMS nuclear bunker, called the Global Operations Center, takes just seconds. AOR strategic forces are always ready to respond, and everybody should know that, I STRATCOM Commander General Hyten told CNN in 2018. AO, they are ready, this minute AO, under the ground, under the sea, in the air, we are ready to respond to any threat, and the adversaries of the world, including Kim Jong-un, have to know that. Are the elevator doors open? AO, if somebody launches a nuclear weapon against us, we launch one back, A says General Hyten. AO, they launch another, we launch another. They launch two, we launch two. A TRTMS and AO escalation ladder, A Hyten says. The STRATCOM commander in this scenario hustles into the underground battle deck, a 1,000 square foot, concrete walled room. His eyes focus on a massive electronic screen that covers almost the entire wall. A display screen the size of a movie theater screen. Three electronic clocks display three different time sequences, being tracked in seconds, as the attacking nuclear missile hurtles toward the United States. These time sequences are referred to as red impact, time remaining until an incoming enemy missile arrives on target. Blue impact, time remaining until the U.S. nuclear counterattack strikes the enemy. Safe escape, time remaining for the commander to exit the bunker and escape. Here inside the bunker, the battle deck staff briefs the commander in a well-rehearsed order that wastes no time. With the red impact and safe escape clocks counting down, getting the blue impact clock running is the top priority, counterattack. At the back of the room, a soundproof divider comes down from the ceiling. It locks into place. The men and women in the battle deck maintain some of the highest security clearances in the U.S. nuclear command and control system. They rehearse launch protocols day in and day out. But the information about to be discussed is far too sensitive for anyone but a small group of STRATCOM officers to hear. The core group assembled now begins discussing launch plans. 1 minute, 30 seconds. MRAD Headquarters, Peterson Space Force Base, Colorado. A little more than 9 miles northeast of Cheyenne Mountain, as the crow flies, at MRAD Headquarters in Colorado, deputies, officers, and military aides run down the corridors of Peterson Space Force Base and into the NORAD NORTHCOM Command Center. The Peterson Command Center looks similar to the one inside Cheyenne Mountain, only at RTMS bigger, designed to accommodate an ever-growing staff assigned to handle new threats. This is a central collection and coordination facility for early warning sensor data currently being received from, and disseminated to, mission partners in the US and around the world. Nuclear command and control is predicated on the concept of redundancy, with multiple organizations performing similar tasks in the event one component fails. From inside this classified facility in the shadow of the Colorado Rockies, the NORAD commander prepares to convey his nuclear attack assessment to the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, co-located inside the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., using an encrypted, EMP-resistant, jam-resistant satellite communications system known as the Advanced Extremely High Frequency System. The NORAD Command Center connects to its partner facility. But the SecDef and the chairman are not quite inside the bunker beneath the Pentagon. Not yet. 2 minutes, National Military Command Center, Pentagon, Pentagon employees note how its center looks like a bullet MSI. Library of Congress, Theodore Horidzak, 2 minutes, have passed. Two men move briskly through the Pentagon, running, not jogging, across the E-ring of TMS high-shinned, linoleum-tiled floors. One, the Secretary of Defense, wears a business suit, white shirt, and tie. The other, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is in military dress, resplendent with stars and bars and ribbons. Each man moves quickly down multiple sets of stairs, through fire doors, down more stairs, through more doors, and into a high security tunnel that leads into the National Military Command Center. Here, the National TMS Stratcom and NRAD commanders wait on satellite comms and video screens for the President of TMS two most senior advisors. If Stratcom and NRAD are the brain and the brainstem of nuclear war, the National Military Command Center beneath the Pentagon is the beating heart of nuclear World War III. Originally called the War Room, this command post was first conceived for the Pentagon, in 1948, as a place to run the next world war. It has been in use 24/7/365 every day of every year, ever since. 2 minutes have now passed since detected launch. The SecDef and the chairman arrive just seconds apart. Via secure satellite video comes from Colorado, the NRAD commander speaks. His assessment is brief and to the point. Tracking data has confirmed a worst-case scenario. An attacking intercontinental ballistic missile is on its way to the east coast of the United States. History lesson number 2, the ICBM, 26 minutes, 40 seconds. To Armageddon, ballistic missile trajectory in three phases of flight, boost, mid-course, and terminal. U.S. Missile Defense Agency, an intercontinental ballistic missile is a long-range missile that delivers nuclear weapons to targets across continents. ICBMs exist to kill millions of people on another side of the world. Back in 1960, when the ICBM had just been invented, the Pentagon TMS chief scientist, a man named Herb York, wanted to know precisely how many minutes it would take for one of these mass extermination rockets to get from a launch pad in Soviet Russia to a city in the United States. York hired a group of defense scientists, called the Jason scientists, to whittle that number down to its most accurate form. The result, Herb York learned, was 26 minutes and 40 seconds, from a launch to annihilation. Just 1,600 seconds. That is it. A copy of this secret assessment lies hidden among Herb York TMS personal papers at the Geisel Library in San Diego. Perhaps York left it there out of carelessness, or maybe he wanted the world to know for certain what war planners and weapons builders have known for decades, but have never revealed in such cold, hard terms. That there is no way to win a nuclear war. It simply happens too fast. The speed at which nuclear war will unfold, and then escalate, all but guarantees that it will end in nuclear holocaust. A.O. the nuclear-armed ICBM threatens us with annihilation, A. York wrote. A.O. the outlook is admittedly bleak. The Jason scientists calculated that Enigma TMS 26 minutes and 40 seconds of travel time occurs in three phases of flight, boost phase, which lasts 5 minutes, mid-course phase, which lasts 20 minutes, terminal phase, which lasts 1.6 minutes, 100 seconds. The 5-minute long boost phase includes the time it takes for the missile to ignite its rocket motors on the launch pad, head into space, and finish powered flight. After powered flight, the warhead is released, typically at an altitude of between 500 and 700 miles. The mid-course phase lasts 20 minutes, and includes the time it takes for the released warhead to coast through space in an arc-like trajectory around the Earth. The terminal phase, or final stage, is incredibly short. Just 1.6 minutes. 100 seconds. The terminal phase begins when the warhead re-enters Earth's TMS atmosphere and ends when the nuclear weapon detonates on its target. The attacking Hwasong-17 in this scenario is a two-stage, liquid-fueled, road-mobile intercontinental ballistic missile. As of 2024, not a lot has been verified about its warhead capabilities, if it carries one or more nuclear warheads, if its payload is thermonuclear, and of what yield. What is known is that it can strike any target in the continental United States. The Jason scientists at TM 26 minutes and 40 seconds launched a target calculation for Herbyuk was done in 1960, when the Soviet Union was the only other nuclear superpower in the world. ICBM launched a target flight sequence. U.S. Air Force. Today, 9 countries possess nuclear weapons: the United States, Russia, France, China, the United Kingdom, Pakistan, India, Israel, and North Korea. Given North Korea's geographical location, the launch to target time frame from the Korean Peninsula to the east coast of the United States is slightly longer. MIT professor Emeritus Theodore A. Ojeda Postholt has done the math for us. It is 33 minutes. The clock is ticking. In this scenario, 2 minutes have passed. Once launched, an ICBM cannot be recalled. The classified papers stashed away in Herbyuk TMS dusty archives forewarn the world of Armageddon, and here we are now. The ICBM threatens us with annihilation. York wrote. True in 1960, true today. 2 minutes, 30 seconds. U.S. Strategic Command, Nebraska. Flooded tarmac, Stratcom headquarters, UCT Air Force Base, Nebraska, in 2019. U.S. Strategic Command. U.S. Strategic Command headquarters in Nebraska sits less than 10 miles south of Omaha, 2 miles west of the Missouri River. Its original name was Fort Crook. Ruinous regional weather includes tornadoes, cyclones, and floods. Deadly tornado funnels menace America's TMS most important strategic nuclear headquarters with increasing regularity. In 2017, 10 aircraft were damaged when a tornado hit UCT Air Force Base. The floods here are catastrophic. During the 2019 season, 700 UCT airmen filled 235,000 sandbags in what was described by the Air Force Times as a valiant, but ultimately unsuccessful, effort to hold the waters back. Some 720 million gallons of sewage-infested waters flooded the base, ruining 137 buildings and destroying 1 million square feet of workspace, including 118,000 square feet of sensitive compartmented information facility space, also known as SIF space, for handling classified material. Half a mile of runway was submerged. The runway at UCT Air Force Base is a critical piece of nuclear counterattack infrastructure, never more so than now in this scenario. With a nuclear-armed ICBM headed to the U.S., the runway here services the mini-fleet of America TMS airborne nuclear command posts, known ominously as its doomsday planes. These retrofitted Boeing aircraft are always at the ready, always prepared to command a nuclear war from the air. AOR military is very powerful, very lethal, I says Captain Ryan Larance, an officer who manages the airman on a doomsday plane. But does not TMT happen without communication. A inside the doomsday plane is where the Stratcom commander can receive launch orders during a nuclear crisis, then execute those orders, even after America TMS nuclear command and control facilities on the ground have been destroyed. Which is why the Stratcom commander is now hyper-focused on getting the blue impact, or counterattack, clock running. Then on getting himself out of Stratcom TMS underground bunker and into a doomsday plane that idles here on the Tarmacu engines, spinning, awaiting his arrival for takeoff. Stratcom TMS Global Operations Center at UCT Air Force Base is considered to be a top 10 nuclear target on every enemy TMS target list, but its commander won't TMT leave the bunker until he speaks with the president first. Track data on the incoming ICBM has determined the missile TMS endpoint to be somewhere on the East Coast, presumably either New York City or Washington, D.C., but it will be another 2 to 3 minutes, before the designated target becomes more precisely defined. 2:45. National Military Command Center, Pentagon. Inside the nuclear command bunker beneath the Pentagon, the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff discuss rapidly what the NORAD commander has just told them, over video comms. An attacking ICBM appears headed for the east coast of the United States. The Secretary of Defense takes charge. Along with the chiefs of the other command facilities, he formulates what he might say to the president when asked. The individuals on this video call are men and women whose professional lives are dedicated to nuclear command and control, who live and breathe hypothetical nuclear war. Once ground radar confirms that an attacking ICBM is on its way to the East Coast, an impossibly dangerous, next step feature of U.S. nuclear warfighting strategy comes to the fore. This feature centers around a decades-old policy called Launch on Warning. A.O. Once we are warned of a nuclear attack, we prepare to launch, a former Secretary of Defense William Perry tells us. A.O. This is policy. We do not wait. A launch on warning policy is why and how America keeps a majority of its deployed nuclear arsenal on ready for launch status, also known as air trigger alert. History lesson number 3. Launch on warning. Launch on warning policy means America will launch its nuclear weapons once its early warning electronic sensor systems warn of an impending nuclear attack. Said differently, if notified of an impending attack, America will not wait and physically absorb a nuclear blow before launching its own nuclear weapons back at whoever was irrational enough to attack the United States. Launch on warning is a key aspect of nuclear war planning the public rarely hears about. A says William Burr, a senior analyst at the National Security Archive at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Launch on warning are in place as policy since the height of the Cold War is also incredibly high risk. A.O. Inexcusably dangerous, a presidential advisor Paul Nitz warned us decades ago. Launch on warning during a time of intense crises is a recipe for catastrophe, Nitz said. During the presidential campaign of George W. Bush in 2000, the future president vowed to address this perilous policy if elected. A.O. Keeping so many weapons on high alert may create unacceptable risks of accidental or unauthorized launch, A. Bush said. A.O. High alert, high trigger status, is another unnecessary vestige of Cold War confrontation. No change was made. Barack Obama echoed the same fundamental concern during his campaign. A.O. keeping nuclear weapons ready to launch on a Memento TMS notice is a dangerous relic of the Cold War, A. Obama declared. A.O. Such policies increase the risk of catastrophic accidents or miscalculation. A. Like his predecessor, President Obama made no change. When President Biden took office, physicist Frank von Hippel urged him to eliminate the perilous policy. A.O. President Biden should end the launch on warning option and the danger it entails of an unintended nuclear Armageddon, A. von Hippel wrote in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. But like his predecessors, President Biden has made no change. And so, decades later, we at most still here, with launch on warning in effect. 3 minutes. National Military Command Center, Pentagon. Inside the bunker beneath the Pentagon, the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff consult with the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, a woman in this scenario who, like General Ellen Pawlikowski, previously commanded the NRO Space Command in Colorado, as well as the Space and Missile Systems Center in California. Her experience makes her uniquely qualified to assess what is going on in this moment, just 3 minutes after launch of an ICBM from a field north of Pyongyang. The vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs has studied enough track data on launched North Korean ICBMs set to fly on preset trajectories so as to land in open water to recognize for herself that what she is looking at is not one of these preset trajectories. This missile TMS trajectory has it headed for the United States. Brilliant, fierce, and not known to mince words, the vice chairman points to the small black ICBM avatar moving ominously across the screen. She inhales, exhales, addresses the Secretary of Defense directly. You should get the president on comms, the vice chairman says. 3 minutes, 15 seconds. The White House, Washington, D.C. It's 3:06 p.m. EST in this scenario and the president is in the White House dining room, reading his midday briefing documents, drinking coffee, and eating an afternoon snack. He will not finish what he is doing. The White House. Photograph by Jet Jacobson. The National Security Advisor rushes into the room, phone in hand. He informs the president that the Secretary of Defense is calling from the National Military Command Center beneath the Pentagon at 2.1 miles away. The president puts the phone to his ear. The Secretary of Defense tells the president, North Korea has launched an attacking missile at the U.S. It is a statement that at first seems implausible. The Secretary of Defense tells the president, NORAD and STRATCOM commanders have validated the assessment. We are awaiting secondary confirmation from ground radar in Alaska. The president turns to the National Security Advisor. He asks if this is some kind of a test. National Security Advisor, this is not a test. 3 minutes, 30 seconds. National Military Command Center, Pentagon. Beneath the Pentagon, the Secretary of Defense watches the missile ITMS trajectory as it moves across the massive screen in front of him. Just 3 minutes, and 30 seconds, have passed, 210 seconds, which means the ICBM missile is still in boost phase. The missile ITMS avatar will soon cross North Korea ITMS northern border into Chinese airspace. Drone engagement range against a Hwasong ICBM in boost phase, as devised by Richard Garwin and Theodore Postol. Imagery drawn by Michael Rami. The job of the Secretary of Defense is to ensure civilian command of the military, a position that is second only to the President, who serves as the Commander-in-Chief. The Secretary of Defense and President are the only two civilian positions within the military chain of command. Standing beside the Secretary of Defense is the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the National ITMS highest ranking and most senior military officer. The chairman at ITMS job is to advise the president, the secretary of defense, the National Security Council members, and others on military matters. The vice chairman is second to him. While the chairman of the Joint Chiefs outranks all other officers in the military, he or she does NOTA and CANOTA command the military. The job is to advise the president and the secretary of defense, to help them decide what is best to do. What actions are the right next actions to take, including in a nuclear war. Everyone here in the underground National Military Command Center is intensely focused on the task at hand. Everyone is also in a state of shock, everyone trained to act like they are not. A nuclear crisis is not a worst-case scenario, it is the worst-case scenario. The so-called unthinkable, and yet, most definitely, not unrehearsed. The ramifications regarding what is about to happen are almost impossible to comprehend. Nuclear war is unprecedented. Over decades, there have been several significant false alarms. In this scenario, what is happening is real. The president now faces an inexorably small decision-making window of time. What must happen next has been rehearsed by everyone presently in attendance on satellite comms, AO except, most likely, the president himself, a former Secretary of Defense Perry tells us. The president in this scenario, like almost all US presidents since John F. Kennedy, is entirely underinformed about how to wage nuclear war when it happens. The president has no idea that as soon as he has been briefed on what is happening, he will have just 6 minutes to deliberate and decide which nuclear weapons to launch in response. 6 minutes. How is that even possible? 6 minutes is roughly the amount of time it takes to brew a 10-cup pot of coffee. As former President Ronald Reagan lamented in his memoirs, AO 6 minutes to decide how to respond to a blip on a radar scope and decide whether to release Armageddon. How could anyone apply reason at a time like that? A nuclear war, we are about to learn, robs man of reason. 4 minute. The White House. Washington, D.C. The president is on his feet in the White House dining room, his cloth napkin on the floor. There are roughly 8 billion people on the planet. In the coming 6 minutes, the president will be asked to make a decision that can kill tens of millions of human beings on the other side of the world in just minutes, not hours, after his authorization. With launch on warning policy in effect, and nuclear war on the horizon, so much hangs in the balance. Civilization as we know it is about to end. A former Secretary of Defense Perry tells us of such a moment as this. This is not an exaggeration, he says. Here in the White House, the National Security Advisor stands a few feet from the president. He is trying to get a North Korean official on the phone, when he is knocked into by the special agent in charge of the presidential protective detail. Of all the people in the room prepared for crisis response, the Secret Service agents on the president's TMS detail are among the best rehearsed. Day in and day out, the U.S. Secret Service trains for this. Into the emergency bunker now, the special agent in charge shouts at the president. Members of the detail hover close by, the agents all speaking into their ear and hand comes in sync. There is a flurry of activity. Two Secret Service agents grab the president by his armpits, his hand still clutching his cell phone. The generals and admirals who are watching all this on satellite cam sit or stand in their respective bunkers while waiting on the president at TMS every word. The emergency plans book, the National Security Advisor says. Keep him with the satchel, says the special agent in charge. We at MA taking him to the sit room. The president does not fully comprehend all that is going on. How fast a nuclear counterattack must unfold. This has not TMT fully landed with him yet. Not even the president has complete knowledge of what is going on in a crisis zone or in a conflict, let alone in a nuclear war, says John Wolfenthal, a former national security advisor to President Obama. Many presidents come to the office uninformed about their role in a nuclear war, a former Secretary of Defense Perry explains. Some seem not to want to know. Once, at a press conference in 1982, President Reagan went so far as to incorrectly tell the public that submarine ballistic missiles are recallable. After the Berlin Wall came down, and the Soviet Union was dissolved, William Perry found in his experience as Secretary of Defense that many people clung to the idea that nuclear war was no longer a threat. When in fact, he now says, nothing could be farther from the truth. In a nuclear war, confusion over protocol and speed of action will have unintended consequences beyond any TMS grasp. It will send the United States of America into the heart of darkness that defense official John Rubel warned about in 1960, into what he called a twilight underworld governed by disciplined, meticulous and energetically mindless groupthink aimed at wiping out half the people living on nearly one-third of the Earth at TMS surface. A history lesson number 4, ICBM launch systems. Since the launch of this ballistic missile in 2012, North Korea TMS ICBMs have gotten increasingly more powerful, and more menacing. The Pentagon Channel via Korean Central News Agency, the Hwasong-17 missile on its way to Washington, D.C., in this scenario was road mobile, meaning it got carried to its launch site by a 22-wheeled vehicle called a transporter erector launcher. The missile itself stands 85 feet tall. In its nose cone it carries a warhead bus that may or may not include dummy, or fake, warheads designed to confuse America TMS missile defense systems that are about to try to shoot it down. In 2021, defense analysts predicted 50% of North Korea TMS ICBMs would succeed in hitting their targets inside the US in 2022. Japan's TMS defense minister publicly confirmed the Hwasong-17 can travel 9,320 miles, far enough to reach the continental United States. The Hwasong-17 ICBM is too heavy to drive around the countryside along North Korea TMS cheaply paved roads, and so it gets driven on dirt roads, along sturdy ground, no recent rain or snow. The US does not have road mobile missile launchers. All 400 of its ICBM missiles are housed in underground silos across America.